From NPR News, this is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. The federal government says the first half of this year has been the warmest in the United States since 1895. Across the country, temperatures continue to soar above 90 degrees and in some places above 100. In California, triple-digit temperatures are blamed for the deaths of at least four people in the last week. And in Missouri, the National Guard was dispatched to St. Louis to set up cooling stations to go door to door. The oppressive heat is especially dangerous for the elderly and disabled, also at risk people living in urban neighborhoods where local governments may not have heat emergency plans. For more, NPR's Farai Chidea spoke with Eric Kleinenberg, a professor of sociology at New York University. He's also the author of Heat Wave, an analysis of heat-related deaths in Chicago. And Dr. Georges Benjamin, executive director of the American Public Health Association. Kleinenberg says heat waves can be dangerous because people often underestimate them. The summer of 1995 is a perfect example.
An unusually severe weather system came up from the southwest, killing chickens and cattle on its way into the city, and meteorologists forecast a very severe heat wave long in advance. But when it hit Chicago, the residents were taken aback, as were local officials. Thousands of people became sick. In fact, so many people became sick that local emergency rooms filled up beyond capacity and had to turn away would-be patients. And then, most startlingly, more than 700 people died from heat that lasted about 2 or 3 days.
So what was the government response, or was there any?
At first, there was incredulity. Chicago officials insisted that nothing like this had happened before. In fact, the mayor actually challenged the medical examiner when he began issuing reports that so many people in the city were dying of heat. So there was a kind of bizarre and, in retrospect, surreal debate about whether the heat deaths were actually taking place when hundreds of bodies were there at the morgue. Unfortunately, the city had a heat emergency plan on the books, but no one knew to use it, and the city failed to produce a collective and coordinated response that might have saved many lives.
First of all, I never even knew that there was such a thing as a heat emergency plan. But now that I know that, are they being put into effect in Chicago or in other cities?
Well, Chicago has become a national leader in preparing for heat emergencies, and some other cities have prepared a little bit more than they had in 1995 as well. But unfortunately, heat waves have long killed more Americans in typical years than all of the other so-called natural disasters combined. That's a long-term trend in the United States, and so there was no reason for Chicago not to be prepared in 1995. And my fear is that today, most cities are waiting until they have a catastrophic experience, in other words, waiting until it's too late, to do what Chicago does now. We live in a time when there are not only extreme temperatures, like what we've seen this past week throughout the United States, but we also have social changes that make American cities more vulnerable. There are people who are aging alone and living alone, people dying alone, more than ever before in this country. And so we have a kind of formula for disaster in the summer that all cities need to take more seriously than they have.
And Dr. Benjamin, you're a practitioner, an administrator, a leader in public health. How well prepared do you think American cities are for this extreme summer weather?
Well, we're getting better, but there are still a lot of things we need to do. You know, the biggest problem is really getting into those communities where we know we have vulnerable populations and making sure that people are certainly aware of the problems with heat, that you have neighbors that can check on one another. We really have not built, in my mind, the community resilience that's necessary to have communities, really empower communities to take care of themselves. There's a lot that government can do, but there's a lot of things that we can do for ourselves and really try to make ourselves safe.
When you say things we can do for ourselves, can you give me some specifics?
Well, it's checking on your family members and your loved ones. I actually had this discussion with my own family about what to do about heat, to check on my mother, making sure that there's air conditioning in place, making sure that people are drinking lots of fluid, making sure that neighbors know to go by and check. And if a person can certainly get out of the house and get to a cooler place if they don't have air conditioning, to assist them to do that.
in the summertime, a lot of folks show up at the library, not necessarily to read the books, but just to get a little cooler. There's public pools in some areas. But the air conditioning can cost a lot of money. It can be a real problem. What about people who can't really get out, can't really get somewhere cooler? Are there any forms of assistance for them?
There are some. There are assistance programs. In many cities, when these emergency plans go in place, they distribute electric fans, for example, to seniors. They go and put outreach workers on the street to knock on people's homes, particularly in these high rises where people are living up very high, and of course, heat does rise, and there are shut-ins, and no one's checking in on them. So the community outreach workers go into these communities and check on them. When the firefighters and EMTs come by the house and check on people throughout the year, particularly in the early summer, and they notice they don't have air conditioning, they can give anticipatory guidance, meaning they can educate them on the importance of trying to get some air. Even if they can't afford it, that's one thing, but in some cases they can. Telling people simply, you know, not to lock people up in a car, you know, don't put your pets and your children in an enclosed car. You know, the temperature in a car can get as high as 140 degrees or even higher. People really don't. They either don't know that or they forget.
Eric, let's get back to the political implications. You have compared the Chicago disaster of 1995 to Katrina's destruction of New Orleans. I mean, is that a fair comparison? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the Katrina disaster busted the myth of natural disaster for many Americans. But in some ways, the Chicago disaster in 1995 and other heat waves had done that long before also. All of the individual level things that people can do to protect themselves and take care of their family are necessary, and the public health message we just heard is important to relate. But at the same time, that's not sufficient. There are certain places in cities that are far more likely to be affected by disasters, whether they are hurricanes or heat waves. So, for example, the neighborhoods in Chicago where people have a more likely chance of suffering or dying tend to be not simply segregated, not simply poor, but also places that have been depopulated, places that lack the public and street-level infrastructure that makes social interaction more likely. So, for example, there are neighborhoods in Chicago that had about 100,000 people in 1960, and that by 1995 had 25,000, 30,000, 40,000 people. With the population loss, they also lost the commercial environment. There are no big grocery stores where you can go get exposure to air conditioning, no big banks, no movie theaters to get relief, none of those libraries. And so people living in those neighborhoods have special needs for services, the same kinds of needs that people needed when Katrina hit. And it's the responsibility, in my view, of American cities, American city governments, to think seriously about how to protect people living in those neighborhoods. We also need to think seriously about how to protect isolated elderly people. Like I said, we live in a time when there are more people aging alone than ever before in our nation's history, and every single family probably has some member or close family friend who lives alone, and we worry about them in a disaster. Sometimes you live nearby and you can check up on them, but in other cases you can live miles or hundreds of miles away and you need help. That's just a reality of American life today.
Dr. Georges, you are an African-American physician. What role should physicians play in advocating not just for specific medical intervention, but for grander public health intervention?
Oh, I think it's very important for physicians to get involved in population-based activities. First of all, they need to make sure they're well-educated on what the problems are in their community, you know, the health disparities that occur, put people at higher risk. So the fact that we have higher risk of heart disease and diabetes and high blood pressure means that their patients are at higher risk. So that means that they need to weigh in with the legislature for funding, for regulations, for putting the infrastructure in place to respond to these various kinds of emergencies, particularly heat emergencies. That means that they have to step out of from the bedside and go to public hearings and engage in the public deliberative process about public health. And we think that's a very important thing to do. And we certainly believe that every physician's second specialty is public health.
And final question for you, Eric. In a time like this, when heat waves, I recently heard from a friend that in South Dakota, it's 110 degrees. In places where people may live in rural areas, they may not have been experiencing things like this. What do you think the federal government should do to play a role in this? Should, for example, the Environmental Protection Agency play a role in a national heat policy, or is there one already in place?
There is not a national heat emergency policy in place, nor is there much of a guideline that you can get from the federal government. Let's face it, now that we know that heat waves are so deadly, and so much more deadly than all of these other natural disasters to which we pay much more attention and give far more resources, doesn't it make sense that we would coordinate some kind of program, at least council cities that want to develop innovative and strong policy programs? It seems to me like, since we live in a time when we're investing enormous resources in the project of securing the homeland, providing real security for Americans, that we should be investing in programs that actually save lives. Here we have a known risk. We have cities that have experience with these dangers and that will continue to do so as the climate changes and more extreme summer weather comes. So I think it's high time for this kind of leadership, and I'm happy to hear that the public health side is interested. If we could get public officials to be interested, we could really do something.
Eric Kleinenberg and Dr. Georges Benjamin, thank you both so much.
Thank you very much.
That was NPR's Farai Chidea speaking with Eric Kleinenberg, professor of sociology at New York University and author of the book Heat Wave, and Dr. Georges Benjamin, executive director of the American Public Health Association.